This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. So, as our listeners know, I'm a huge fan of music, and I love sharing it on our show. And today we have a whole show devoted to music. We'll be hearing from an awesome new alt-country band, Gregory Childs and Heartlung, very soon. And then, coming up later on in the program, we have music critic and arts journalist Matt Bobkin, who's going to talk about his incredible 6 years at Exclaim magazine and his iconic cover story with Billie Eilish, and also about his upcoming book, In Too Deep, When Canadian Punks Took Over the World, which he co-authored with Adam Feibel. And that book is being published by the House of Anansi Press in 2025. All of that coming up later on in the show. But first, let me tell you about our first guests. I'm joined by two members of an awesome band called Gregory Childs and Heartlung. And before we meet them, let me tell you a little bit more about them. Gregory Childs and Heartlung are an alt-country band converging on the corner where roots meets grunge. The band is led by songwriter Gregory Childs and consists of his wife, Velvet Jean, aka the very beautiful and talented Tyra Coleman, as well as a crew of longtime friends, Brent Curvin, Jonathan Billings, Luke Sutherland, and Zachary Malochi, who make up the gritty mix of musical accompaniment that includes harmonica, guitar, drums, and screams. You have to tell me about that. In October 2020, the band dropped their debut first release, the Baby Blue EP, which was distributed both digitally as well as physically in a limited release of 7-inch vinyl. And that EP contained two tracks, Baby Blue and Blood Ties, both of which garnered play on local radio stations, including CIUT 89.5 FM, as well as internationally on Galaxy FM in Kawerau, New Zealand, where it was picked up by local music enthusiasts and broadcast regularly. In 2022, the band released two new singles, Lonesome and From the Chest. Both were broadcast on numerous radio stations, including multiple shows on CIUT 89.5 FM and NZ's Galaxy 107 FM. From the Chest actually reached number 6 on the Canadian Independent Country Countdown, run by Coyote 103 FM in Sarnia, Ontario. In early 2023, Gregory Childs and Heartlung were discovered by Alan Cross, who featured the band. They described it as an undiscovered gem as part of History of New Music show, playing their music on The Edge 102.1 FM and describing the band as, love this, unplugged Nirvana, maybe even a little dark Fleetwood Mac. In 2024, the band was featured by Canadian radio legend Jeff Woods on his Records and Rockstars podcast, and that episode aired on April the 5th. Throughout the band's existence, they've been regulars on the Toronto music scene, consistently gigging at places like the Dakota Tavern, Cameron House, and Kensington Market. They have finished recording a full-length album and have been mixing in preparation for a release in the fall of 2024. And the first single from the album, titled Useless and Young, was released January 30th, 2024. Gregory and Tyra, so great to have you here. Welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here. Yeah, thank you for having us.
Great to be here with you.
So excited. You're such a gorgeous couple. I'm just seeing this. Those of you who are not seeing this on the radio yet, but you'll see this when it comes to our YouTube channel on video. But they're a gorgeous couple. So before we start, I have to let everyone in on a little secret here. I have known Tyra since she was a wish and a prayer and have always thought of her as a beautiful and talented unsung hero. So I was not at all surprised when I heard she had joined her husband's band and they were singing together. So it's really great to see you, Tyra, and to see you both. And congratulations, Gregory and Tyra, on your awesome band, Gregory Childs and Heartlung. I'd love to start at the very beginning, Gregory. I'd love to hear about your brainchild, Gregory Childs and Heartlung, which I know you began, I believe, in 2019. Can you tell us about the inspiration for the band, for your music, and for this very cool name of your band.
Yeah, 100%. Well, it's great to be here and appreciate meeting you and hanging out today. It started just, I've played music since I was in high school and then over the years in different projects. And this project started just me trying to explore, just kind of getting into a bit more roots music and kind of feeling kind of what felt right to me, which was falling back into just more simple chords, just playing, saying what it is, just really laying it out honestly and real. And I started it with some of my longtime friends. We were having a lot of fun playing music, getting stuff together, and then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And it was became very important to me during COVID as this sort of weekly kind of session just to come together and feel like we could do something and connect together and write and work. So that's kind of how the whole thing started. Heart Lung comes from just like, you know, the heart and lungs are just pumping through. And it's Gregory Childs and Heart Lung because I was kind of the lead songwriter, which has changed recently with Tyra bringing more into it. But back then it was more, Heart Lung was just the band pulling in all the energy and I was kind of leading that energy. Yeah.
Nice. Well, the sound is gorgeous and I'm so excited to share a couple of the tracks with the listeners coming up very soon. I also wanted to ask you about Alan Cross, who sort of discovered you, and he's a veteran, of course, in the Canadian music industry and a radio broadcaster. And in early 2023, Cross featured your band and called it an undiscovered gem as part of History of New Music show, playing your music on The Edge 102.1 FM. And as I sort of referred to earlier, describing the band as unplugged Nirvana, maybe even a little dark Fleetwood Mac. I love that reference. Can you tell us about Canadian music industry veteran and broadcaster Alan Cross and how he got involved?
Yeah, so I just was, you know, sending our track out to some people, trying to get some traction and people to check it out. And one of them on the list was, I was like, you know what? Like, I grew up listening to Edge 102, Alan Cross, History of New Music. And I was like, I'm just going to send it to Alan Cross and see if he ignores us or digs it or whatever. And he actually wrote back and he liked it and he said, I want to actually play it. He runs, I think it's a weekly or bi-weekly series called The Undiscovered Gem. And he gives kind of up and coming or lesser known bands like a chance to be heard. So he kind of profiled us that night and played our song as part of his History of New Music show, which was pretty sweet. It's a pretty big honor. We all hung out and had a couple of beers and listened to it on the radio when it happened. It was sweet. Yeah. Nice.
That's so great. You know, you just need someone to believe in you. I remember a producer once telling me at the CBC, all you need is one producer, one person to believe in you, and you're on your way. So it's so great that he came along. I also love your stage name, Tyra, which is Velvet Jean. And It took one of those deal or no deal lifeline phone calls with your mom, the beautiful makeup artist to the stars, Nancy Crosley, to figure out that Jean, of course, is after your dear and beloved late grandmother, Jean Crosley, who I also knew very well. She used to be my makeup artist, along with the makeup artist of Lloyd Robertson and many others. Tyra, can you tell us how you came up with the name Velvet Jean?
Yeah, I think like I've always wanted to incorporate the name Jean as part of something. And for me, having this kind of like alter ego as an artist, it helps you just kind of have this presence, like when you're on stage and you can kind of separate yourself from it in a way. Mm-hmm. And Jean, of course, yeah, is after my grandmother, who met my grandpa on set, and my grandfather was a very amazing singer.
Yes.
And worked a lot in the industry in Canada. And so I just thought I would include Jean kind of to be like on the stage too, you know? Nice. So when I'm performing, she's on the stage as well with me. And it's just an ode to her and my grandpa, you know?
So, I love that. And your grandpa was an amazing artist. I mean, he was compared to Frank Sinatra. I knew him quite well. He was very good looking, which is, I think, where a lot of you get your good looks from. His voice was gorgeous. And so was he. And so you come by it honestly, which is so cool.
Yeah.
So you guys have a great band, Gregory. Can you tell us about your band members, how you all came together? I know you've known them since your childhood. You were saying like you grew up with these guys. You're the front man. Can you tell us about some of the other band members?
Yeah, so I want to give a huge shout out to some of the original members. Nick Cousins, amazing lead guitar player and harmonica player, plays guitar on Useless and Young, the track we're going to be playing later, and harmonica on that track. And Zachary Maloki, they're no longer in the project over the last couple of years. People have changed life decisions and different avenues of life. People have kind of gone off in different paths. But now we play with lead guitar player Jonathan Billings, who's kind of like a local ornament of the city. He's playing constantly, an amazing guy, an insane guitar player. Our new drummer is Luke Sutherland, who also plays in a really kind of cool punk rock band called Equator. And we're Brent Curvin is our bass player that we worked with really closely for a long time. He's currently taking a break to focus on some other stuff. So we brought in a bass player named Melissa Pageau, who we'd actually just played one show with. So she's new on the roster. And then obviously beautiful Velvet Jean, killer voice, which was really cool bringing Tyra in because, you know,
yeah,
it just kind of happened. Like
when we first met each other, we discovered this connection in music, and Greg kind of invited me to band practice because we had been like singing together, just us. And then, yeah, he invited me to band practice, and this was back in 2019. So I've been in this for a while now.
Yeah.
And it just like clicked. Like, I still remember that first practice and how everything just clicked. And yeah, so ever since.
So huge shout out to Nick Cousins and Zachary Maloki and Brent Curvin. They really helped the project like move along, and we're going into a new phase of Harlem now, but just want to give a huge shout out to those guys because they were massive in the instrumentation of it. So
that is so great. That is so, so great. Can you tell us a little more about how you would describe your music? And I know I've given some references to quotes that have been made about the band, but in your own words, how you would describe the music that you create?
Yeah, I think we try to be really honest to a fault. This whole thing for me, and you know, Tyra can share her side of it, but for me is about just letting a lot of the curtains down and just really opening up about, you know, what we're experiencing or maybe what we don't want to experience. There's the hypothetical songs are not all about things we've gone through, things maybe friends or family have gone through, things that we hope we don't have to go through.
Right.
So there's a lot there for me. That's where the music is based from. And there's a bit of spirituality in it and just trying to connect with, resonate with maybe what grounds us in this world and where we're coming from. And but just trying to approach it from a very straightforward and real way. A lot of the songs are just G, D, C, couple A minors.
Yeah, but like Jonathan says, though, it's like Greg has a way with songwriting of making three chords sound like 12, you know what I mean? So it's all about the dynamics sometimes, and Greg's a very talented songwriter, and we write songs together, and I mean, whether he's the one writing or I'm the one writing, we always end up like helping each other. And yeah, I really like the dark Fleetwood Mac reference because I feel that together, like we have very contrasting voices, but I like to think I add like more of like an ethereal kind of quality to it where it's kind of like soft meeting like a rougher, like growlier voice.
Yes.
So
beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful juxtaposition. You know, we're going to be playing a gorgeous song later on in the program, Useless and Young, from your band, Gregory Childs and Heartland. But I just wanted everyone in our audience to just hear you guys singing together off the top. And what I love about the track that we're about to play is that it also features you, Tyra, and both of you sound absolutely gorgeous in it. So can you set up the song Lonesome so that we can share it with our listeners?
Well, I can start off just by saying it's the first song that Greg and I wrote together.
Nice.
When we were first dating about 5 years ago.
Yeah. We actually wrote this song with our friend Oliver Kirby. He's a co-writer on it. So it's actually, there's three writers on this song. Oliver is a good friend of ours. He was my best man in our wedding. And he came up with the kind of chorus. And Tyra and I really liked the chorus he came up with. And we actually took it back to a little restaurant called Bam Pod that Tyra's sister and my brother-in-law used to run, and we actually finished writing the song in Bam Pod.
Fourth
or fifth date together, and we were sitting there with Mark and Hannah, and we were
they made us a nice charcuterie board. There was like, this painting behind Greg, and Greg also sails, like he's like a sailor, and there was this painting behind him as I was waiting for him of this like sailor man who looked exactly like Greg, and it was like really freaky.
Wow, that's so cool. It was meant to be.
Yeah,
and I think the song in a lot of ways is sort of a testament to what you hope to avoid as you grow and as you change and as you encounter all the challenges of the world. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a way of saying like, hey, like this is a scenario that we don't want to be. It's almost like letting out the fear.
Yeah. We have both been through like breakups as well. And when we were first seeing each other. And so I think it was just, we were letting out some energy.
Nice. Nice. Without further ado, let's hear a little excerpt from the song Lonesome. Let's all have a listen.
We were too young and it was all new. Didn't know myself. Barely knew you. If you're really honest, then you'll say that too. Now I'm in my own space trying to turn back the clock. Back to those yesterdays when all time seemed to stop. That ignorant haze so much better than what we got. I'm lonesome, but I'll be alright, I'll be home soon. And we will not fight this time, please, babe. Babe, please, this time. I've been waiting, night after night, I've been patient. Fighting your fight, it's not fair, babe. Babe, it's not fair.
Oh my God, that is so gorgeous. I love the blending of your two voices together. You really sound fantastic. What was it like making that song?
Thanks, Judy.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think it was pretty intense. There's like, you know, there's a lot of moments recording it where you're just kind of trying to get into that zone, and it's a pretty intense place to be. I don't know if you, Tara.
Yeah, I don't know. It was, I mean, for me, that was the first song that I had ever gone into. Where were we? Were we at Lynx? We were at a studio. Was it Lynx?
Oh, we recorded, that was a demo. We recorded of it at Lynx, but we recorded this in a friend's attic in Kitchener, actually.
Nice.
Attic
studio.
So, but this was one of my first times, if not the first time, that I was in a studio environment.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
So it was, I mean, it was pretty cool for me. I remember holding on to like crystals for like good vibes as I was singing. So
absolutely. It all works. I love hearing the little ritual that band members have. You know, everyone has their own little thing, right? Band members, actors, right? Singers. And I know that your live show ritual involves 2 to 3 Miller Lights, a string change, and a handshake. So what's the string change all about? I always thought a string change is something you use when your string breaks, but you've got another.
So I used to play in a kind of a folk band called Wilmot Red a long time ago, and I had a problem with playing my guitar too hard and breaking strings like every single show. So I developed kind of a paranoia around breaking strings. So I've taken to putting on new strings before every single show. Just because they're stronger, which is probably not necessary anymore. I've gotten a little better at controlling myself, but so yeah. And then, you know, just as a group, we always try to hang out a bit before if we can, and just have a couple of drinks and like talk and
connect
with everybody, and, you know, try to bring that same approach that comes with the writing of the music to the performing of the music. And I feel like our performances are a pretty honest revealing of the songs and an honest telling of the songs. And we're not just going through the motions. We're trying to like relive what these songs are about and really get us.
Great.
That's
so great. You also talk, Gregory, about the importance of fully embracing life, living it day to day as the first step towards songwriting. I found that fascinating. Can you say more about that?
Yeah. So for me, everybody's different. I believe that if you're just playing guitar all the time, then you're just going to write songs about playing guitar. I think it's important sometimes to put down, you know, the instrument or the brush or whatever it may be in your life and just get out there and get dirty with life. Like, let life be on you and live life and feel what comes back from it. And then there's these moments where the instruments come back and the tools come back. And I think for me, that is where the essence of kind of writing comes from.
So great. That's so great. Mm-hmm. You also have a philosophy, as you put it, of embracing dichotomy and the relationships between past, present, and future. Just briefly, what did you mean by that exactly?
Yeah, I think it's easy to get stuck in nostalgia. And I think for me, I find I can go backwards a lot, really thinking about the past, really thinking about good and bad in the past. And it's important to try to pull yourself out of that and remember that there is the present, there is the future. And that's like useless and young, that just the dichotomy of, you know, sometimes these different energies of feeling high, feeling low, at the same time, feeling full of energy, but also unable to do anything.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I meant by that. And I think that comes into a lot of our songs with that energy of sort of two things that may seem like they don't connect, but you may be feeling them at the exact same time.
Wow.
Things like
nice.
That.
Nice.
Yeah. And we kind of like incorporated that into our wedding too. We had like a black and white floor, right? Yeah. To represent this dichotomy that exists in everything. Like there's, it's, you know, it's like yin yang, right? And mm-hmm. for us, it was, which we put into our vows was memento mori, which basically is to embrace life because it's not like permanent, right?
Yes.
So yeah.
I love that. I love that. I'm just picturing that. It looks so incredible. You have a new album in the works that's coming out later in 2024. Can you tell us a little bit about it? Is there a release date yet?
There's not a release date yet. We're currently, actually yesterday, I just received some more overdubs. We're working with Jonathan Billings, who is our lead guitar player, to add on some more overdubs and some pedal steel. And we're then going to be taking all of these overdubs and I'm going to be going back to the studio to finalize the last 3 to 5 tracks that are going to be on the album. About half of them are done. And I'm hoping it's going to come out in the next couple months. There's a chance it might filter into the beginning of 2025, but we'll just see how it goes.
That's great. But how exciting that that's happening. And
we're super excited. Yeah.
You'll have to come back on. You'll have to come back on so we can promote it just as it comes out as the thing. Well, I can't wait to check out that album when it drops. So the moment we've all been waiting for here, without further ado, let's all have a listen to Useless and Young by Gregory Childs and Heartland. Let's all have a listen. Due to international copyright law, podcasts are unable to include music. Music can only be played on the live radio broadcast. Finding Your Bliss airs every Saturday at 1 p.m. If you'd like to hear this artist's music, you can find the link to our Finding Your Bliss SoundCloud in the episode description. Oh my God, Gregory, Tyra, that was fantastic. If you'd like to hear the song in its entirety, just check it out on Apple Music. The name of the song again is Useless and Young. There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show, and of course we're going to ask you both. So let me start with you, Tyra. What is bliss these days for Tyra Childs, or as you're known in the band, Velvet Jean?
Bliss for me, I think I am really trying to be mindful these days. Like, I know you're saying that you teach meditation, and I've been really interested in mindfulness, and like I'm taking a course right now on mindfulness research.
Great.
And I'm really interested in it. And so I try to take time for myself. And as actually Greg was talking to me about yesterday, like you don't have to earn downtime or time to yourself to relax and recharge. To me, I think sometimes just disconnecting from anything work related or things that are causing you stress and just like doing some breathing, being outside and just realizing that, you know, there's always a solution to everything, and take care of yourself first because you are like the tool for everything that you want to achieve in life. So, yeah.
Lovely. Beautifully said. Yeah. And of course, what is bliss for Gregory Childs?
I think for me, it's when we are able to get everybody together in a room and the band is just, you know, everyone's greased up and on firing on all cylinders. That's just a feeling that it's hard to compete with, and it really, that's for me, is makes me feel bliss.
So great. Well, you're doing it and it's amazing, and I wish you guys much continued success and good luck with the album and with all of it. And I'm so excited to share your gorgeous music with our listeners, and I think everyone's in for a real treat with you guys. It's fabulous. It was fun to hang out with you also.
Yeah,
and Judy, for having us on. We really appreciate your time and including us in your awesome program. So thank you
so much. I congrats on your marriage. Congrats on your band, on your album, and just this vibe. I'm really thrilled for you. What's the best way for people to contact you, listen to your music, and connect with you both on social media?
Tyra's on social media at Velvet Jean Music, right? It's your handle?
Yeah, I think it's just Velvet Jean. And then Gregory.
We're on Instagram. We're gregorychilds.heartlung. And that's probably the best way to contact us and find out when we're playing. We're most active on Instagram, just posting there.
Nice. Sounds fantastic. Well, I want to thank you both, Gregory and Tyra. See, we had to do a show to get to see each other, Tyra. We had to go on the air.
I know. Oh, my goodness. Next time we have to go out for
I want to do that for sure. I would love that.
We're going to go on a short commercial break. More with Finding Your Bliss and music critic Matt Bobkin when we come back. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740, FM 96.7. And we're now joined by music critic and arts journalist Matt Bobkin. Based in Toronto, most of Matt Bobkin's work uses music as a lens to explore global issues such as identity, gender, disability, and gentrification. Matt was the features editor at the Canadian music magazine Exclaim from 2016 to 2022. And his work has also appeared in the National Post newspaper, Vice, and Brooklyn Magazine. His first book, In Too Deep, When Canadian Punks Took Over the World, co-written with fellow Toronto-based music critic Adam Feibel, and that will be released in June 2025 via the House of Anansi Press. Wow, that's very heady stuff. Congratulations, Matt, on this upcoming book. It sounds fabulous. And welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
So I know this is partly in the family because I remember when your mom, Celia Bobkin, worked with the late, great journalist Peter Zosky on his iconic show, Morningside on CBC, and then her many years as a senior producer on CBC Midday. So I'm wondering if she was an influence and how you became a journalist and a music critic. And I'm just wondering if you can tell us more about your background and the early days of your career.
So when I was growing up in Toronto, my mom would take me and my little brother to school. We would listen to CBC Radio 1 every day. And I didn't realize, I think, until I went to journalism school in my early 20s, that that wasn't the case for so many people. And that she really just kind of introduced the value of good storytelling and exposed me to it and how to think critically about it, too, from a young age. And then music as another part where I was taking piano lessons at 5. I sang in a choir in the Toronto Children's Chorus between the ages of, I think, 8 and 14, also from her influence. My mom also sang in choir growing up. And even though the music that I write about is a far cry from very far away from the music that I grew up singing, and my mom definitely noticed my musical ear, noticed my love of storytelling, and helped foster that, but also just through the general exposure, because that's what she was interested in. But when I put it like that, it's like I've taken it all from her, and it really does genuinely resonate with me.
Isn't that wonderful? I also remember she took you to the library always. Like, she was a big person for the library and reading at a young age, and you took books out, and she's a great mom and person. And I've always known that there was something special about you, Matt, and I've really watched your career with great excitement and joy, really, and love the fact that you were the features editor at Canadian music magazine Exclaim from 2016 to 2022. That's 6 years. That's like 50 years in Hollywood. Like, that's a long time. And you say that emerging Canadian artists were your beat at Exclaim. Can you tell us more about your time working at Exclaim and exactly what you were doing?
Yeah, so I started at Exclaim when I was fresh out of journalism school. I did my master's in journalism and communications at Western University in London, Ontario. And I had been freelancing for Exclaim for a few years. And when I got there, I was doing digital marketing, but they would always give the non-editorial staff members who could write better editorial opportunities. And I was interviewing a lot of American artists. But because of my time at Exclaim, I was going to a lot of concerts and I was discovering a lot of local bands. And I mean, you know, wherever I've been, I've always liked to, you know, show up early for the local bands who are opening for the shows or going to house shows. And so I've always had a love of local music because then you can befriend these people. And so I just started noticing all the cool artists in my backyard. I mean, I had done that before I was at Exclaim, but while I was there, I realized the power of writing about them too.
Wow.
And so I started a column in 2020, right before the pandemic, called New Faves, which myself and other Exclaim writers would, every month, we would write about, you know, just 100 words about a new Canadian artist who was exciting to us. And we would say, it sounds like this, but, you know, influenced in this way. And, you know, these are the realms in which they're doing something cool and interesting. And, you know, and particularly once the pandemic hit, I really found the value of fostering a musical community and using Exclaim's platform to put Canadian music on the map. Because I think it's really important. It's really powerful when you share a connection as common as like which grocery store you go to, you know, or what the mayor is doing, how you feel about that. I think that really does foster musical connection. You can, even if you can't hear it in the lyrics, you can feel it, I think, in what you hear.
Absolutely. And they must have been so grateful to you, particularly, I would think, during the pandemic when musicians and artists of all kind were lost. I mean, they've lost their ability to perform and to be seen, and you gave them a platform. How were you able to connect with them during the pandemic, these artists, seeing them online, or how did that work?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of email, some Instagram, and but yeah, just a lot of emails from them. They would tell me their stories. I would listen. I had so much, I had so much time now that I wasn't going out to concerts anymore. And so I would just listen to as many things that came in as I could. And if it really resonated with me, I would respond back. And, you know, even if we couldn't arrange a content opportunity at the time, just having that dialogue, I think, was so important.
Wow.
And so meaningful for both of us.
Your musical Rolodex might be something else. And I love the fact that it's up and comers all the way to people like Billie Eilish, who, I mean, of course, and I just want to actually talk to our audience about Billie Eilish for anyone who doesn't know who she is and what she is. She's one of the most popular pop artists of the last decade, the youngest person ever to win a Grammy Award for Album of the Year, for her album When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go, in 2020 at the age of 18. And you got to interview her, Matt, 5 years ago in 2019. And at the time, you were the only critic with enough experience at Exclaim to do this, despite your being outside Billie's target demographic. But you said, and I quote, "I only accepted the assignment because my brother was a big fan and I was keen to write another cover story." That must have been huge. And especially now in retrospect, can you tell us about that interview with Billie Eilish, your early impressions of her and the impact on your career?
Yeah. So Billie Eilish, I knew her name. I knew she was in the pop world. I mean, my first musical love will always be rock music, but I do have favorites and affinities across the musical spectrum. And so when my editor asked me about Billie Eilish, I was aware of her and I had listened to her early singles. And I told my younger brother, Ryan, who, Judy, I know you know quite well as well.
Yes.
Yeah, my little brother, Ryan, I told him, he was in university at the time. And he said, "You have to talk to her. She's amazing." And so, I mean, Billie was, I want to say maybe 17 or 18 at the time that we spoke. And she had so much confidence and poise, but in an honest, like rough around the edges way. Like she did not care what you thought of her. Her only objective was to represent herself as meaningfully as she could.
Wow.
And I was just so impressed by that. I mean, I was not the most confident teenager out there, you know, back then. So I just really appreciated her, like, take no prisoners attitude. She was going to call you out on if you said something that didn't sit well with her. And she was going to be vulnerable with you if that was authentic to her, if that was meaningful to her. And so it was really cool just to talk to this confident young person who, particularly with, I think, a lot of what we've heard about teen stars and child stars.
Yes.
I think fame does a number on young people. And that's what my book explores to some degree as well. And so just to hear her talk about this kind of at her first, one of her early peaks of fame. I mean, who knew in 5 years, Oscar winner, Grammy winner. I don't think any of that had happened at that time. And so she just felt so prepared and so able to take care of herself or advocate for that, which especially given some of recent pop culture explorations, it goes a long way. Really impressive. And I think it says so much about her fortitude and her musical vision.
She wasn't really a star yet, but were you sort of star-studded by her?
I don't get starstruck. And I think that's something that has helped me as an arts and culture journalist dealing with, big artists who have publicists. I don't know. It just has never, and even running into them in person, it has never really made me anxious, which is great because a lot of things have made me anxious over the years. But I was just impressed with her sense of self at such a young age, young and impressionable age. I mean, I, had interns who were a couple years older than Billie Eilish who, I love them, but at the time, just did not have a fraction of the self-confidence that she had. I've spoken with big artists in their 30s and 40s who didn't have what she had then. I can't even imagine now. She just knew what worked for her. And that's always been her pursuit. And that's always why I've admired her as an artist.
To what do you attribute that confidence? Do you think it came from her childhood, the parenting that she acquired? Like, what do you think helped or aided in that incredible, resolute confidence that she really does possess even to this day?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that you could say something about her parents both being actors, performers in LA, her older brother, Phineas, who I also got to interview right after. Phineas also being a child actor, he was on Glee. But I think Billie was in an environment. She told me about how her parents would let her wear whatever she wanted. Maybe Phineas told me that, but Billie did grow up in an environment where she was encouraged, or at least that's the narrative that, she and her brother told me. But I think that if you are such a visionary, you just learn to trust your instincts, regardless of what other people think.
Mm-hmm. That's so fantastic. Do you do that? Do you trust your instincts at this stage of the game?
I do trust my instincts, absolutely. As an artist, I mean, the world so rarely gives you that signal to go because, I mean, not enough financial compensation. I mean, you get paid at the end, so you have to put all this time and energy in for an unknown sum. And also, I mean, if you want to do something new and novel, people don't buy in necessarily right away. You have to be your first champion. And if you're not gassing yourself up and fully confident, then it'll be very easy for them to tear you down. And so, yeah, I have honed that confidence. And despite the anxiety I felt in my life, I think I've always been able to have ideas that I feel very confident about to pursue. And they don't always come to fruition. This is certainly not the first book idea I've come up with in my life, but it's the first book I've ever written. But yeah, and knowing when to fold, knowing when to pack it in and do something else, I think is also a skill in and of itself. Over the years, I have received enough validation that I have that confidence, but I think there was always something that was propelling me forward, even when I think the environment wouldn't speak to that. When I'm not getting the signs from anywhere else but me, I still would move forward.
That's fantastic.
So I think that speaks to something.
I love that. Someone wrote about you when you left Exclaim magazine. They said it was the end of an era. When I think of Exclaim magazine, I think of Matt Bobkin. Was it hard for you to leave all that adulation and that place of where I'm sure you felt very grounded and appreciated? And what did you miss after you left the most?
Yeah, that was one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make in my life. And I knew that, and this might sound superficial, but I knew on Instagram, the bands that were following me and DMing me, messaging me privately would unfollow me because I wasn't useful to them anymore. Oh. And I was afraid that my value was so tied to my job. And I mean, you know, I appreciate the sentiment about your end of an era and, you know, no Exclaim without me. I mean, I am but a piece in the giant puzzle that is Exclaim. You know, I had incredible bosses. The two founders, Ian Danzig and Atsuko Kobasagawa, are still there after over 30 years. Wow. I mean, it is their baby. It is, you know, their first child. they have several real children, but Exclaim is, yeah, I mean, and there are so many other amazing colleagues, some who are still at Exclaim, some who aren't, who are doing amazing things elsewhere. And it's amazing to be a part of that. But yeah, it was such a huge part of me. I was Matt from Exclaim. You know, when I would call people up for interviews, I'm always Matt from Exclaim. I mean, people's phones as Matt from Exclaim. And so losing that was so difficult. I did not make that decision lightly.
Wow. Well, what gave you the confidence to do it? You wanted to start writing your book and doing other things. Like, what was the main motivator for moving on?
So my book was in an interesting point at that time. It was about a year into myself and Adam doing the initial research. We started it summer 2021. We started with the research. We did some preliminary interviews, and within a year, we had pitched it out to agents and publishers, and we heard nothing back. And we thought the book was done. And there were just some other things going on in my life that made me think that it was my time to leave Exclaim. It was my only full-time job. I was, you know, in my, you know, starting to hit the end of my 20s, and I just, making the magazine, which was a huge part of my job, and greenlighting content and interviewing bands and writing those stories that were around 1,000 to 2,000 words. I had done so much of that for so long that it started losing its magic to me. Mm-hmm. And it's such a wonderful thing to do. And I just felt like it was my time to go. I wanted to give opportunities to people who wanted it more. And I wanted to give myself opportunities that were more meaningful, because I am driven by novelty. And I didn't want to grow resentful of such a magical place and such an important part of Canadian culture.
You wanted to be like Karen Kane, leaving at the top of your game, doing that swan song when you were at your best, not when you were already. But I think that's brilliant. I think that's also knowing yourself so well and trusting your instincts. And when you left, you expressed your massive thanks to all of your colleagues, contributors, artists, publicists, organizers, promoters, and managers who gave you so many wonderful adventures and experiences. Are a lot of the stories that you wrote while you were there, are any of those stories in the book? Or are they sort of regurgitated in any way? Or is the book all new stuff?
The book is almost entirely different than my work from Exclaim. Yeah. This book really was a return to me, to the music of my youth.
Yes.
The music that made me a critic, as opposed to the music that I was actually a critic about.
Yes, that's so, I love that. So I know you've structured the book to talk about the music from the 90s to the present, which is the music that you know the best. And I just wanted to ask you about punk rock for our listeners who may or may not know about it, what it is about punk music that interests you. And I just want to tell our audience that punk rock is a music genre that emerged in the mid-1970s, rooted in 1950s rock and roll and 1960s garage rock. Punk bands rejected the corporate nature of mainstream 1970s rock music. That's what the music critics say it is. What do you as a music critic say it is? What is it to you?
Punk is a protest. It is an uprising. It is looking at dominant cultural forces and saying, that's not for me. I got to do my own thing. And it led to this very interesting, almost like a juncture where in the 90s, people started becoming world famous and rich off of punk music. Mm-hmm. You have a band like Green Day, and their first album in 1994, their major label debut, was technically their third record, which was on a major label and just kind of blew anyone's expectations of how big punk music could get. But then people said, but that's not punk, that's mainstream now. The kids are liking it. But then as punk music evolved in the public sphere, I think it still always commented on what was going on around it in an adversarial way. Avril Lavigne, who I think a lot of people would I mean, many people would readily say that she's a pop star. Many people would say she's punk. You can tell the age of that person from which camp they're in. And, you know, I had a really great chat with George Strombolopoulos, the CBC journalist, formerly Much Music VJ, who I was inspired by when I was a kid. He left in 2004, 2005, which was right in the start of my Much Music obsession. And he, I spent an afternoon at his house for the book, and he told me that, you know, Avril is punk because she dressed like everyone else. She wore, you know, Dickies and Vans, and, you know, she had the tank top with the tie loosely wrapped around her neck. She dressed like anyone could do that, but they weren't doing that. But you could go to the thrift store and dress like Avril, whereas you couldn't dress like Britney. You couldn't dress like the Backstreet Boys.
I'm still reeling over the fact that you were in Strombo's home. Were you near that gorgeous chandelier where he shot all of his scenes in the Tragically Hip No Dress Rehearsals four-part docuseries? I don't know if you've seen it, but I just interviewed Jake Gold on this show. And I, of course, saw the four-part film at TIFF and incredible. And those scenes, like, I'm just blown away that you'd spend an afternoon at his home. That's so cool. Did you write about him?
Yes, George is quoted throughout the book. He's kind of one of our main commenters who was not directly involved with the teams. But I think of the nine featured artists and bands in the book, I think he interviewed eight of them at Much Music.
Oh my goodness.
Or on his radio show on The Edge, Punkorama. So George was very much the model, you know. He was I think Canada's big punk journalist up to this point, other than maybe Nardwuar. But Nardwuar was, you know, even earlier and doing his own thing. And he's very much expanded too. But yeah, Strombo is a huge influence. And he was there. And he had that critical eye, like, because Adam and I are both in our early 30s. We weren't going to see these bands in the early 2000s. We were kids. Our parents never would have let us do that. So Strombo was a good stand-in, but Strombo deals more in broadcasting, in radio, in television. He's not as prolific a writer, so that's, which is good for us, or else he would have written this book decades ago.
But I'm going to say he appreciates an intellectual, and he appreciates someone who speaks and expresses themselves the way you do. So I can just imagine that he was a fan from the get-go. I'm not at all surprised by that. A lot of the bands that you feature in the book are some of my producer Siobhan's favorites. She was 6 years old when Avril Lavigne dropped her hit album, Let Go, and she's never forgotten it. And one of my other producers, Eva, was 10 when Sum 41 released their hits, and it changed her life. What was it, Matt, that attracted you to that band, Sum 41?
Sum 41 has never cared about what other people think. And they musically have drawn from so many different genres. They infused their punk with metal and with hip hop. Now, of course, when I was a kid, when Sum 41 was getting famous, I didn't know any of that. But I just thought it was cool. It was different. There's still an underlying pop-like musicality to it. And so I think I can just feel the vastness of their influences. There were just so many things to get into with them, between the metal, the punk, the rock, the hip hop, and the pop, that no matter what day of the week, no matter how I was feeling, there was always some element of Sum 41 that emulated how I was feeling. And as a kid, I had a lot of feelings.
That resonates. That resonates a lot. Why did you call your book In Too Deep? Is it named after the Sum 41 song In Too Deep from their debut studio album, All Killer, No Filler? Just more about what made you so passionate about this idea that you wanted to write it. Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. And when we come back, we'll find out all about Matt's book, In Too Deep. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Zoomer Radio, AM 740, FM 96.7. And Matt, just before the break, I was asking you about your brainchild along with your co-author of In Too Deep. What was it named after?
Yeah, so the book is named after the Sum 41 song. Actually, when Derek Whibley, the lead singer, he just released his own memoir in October 2024. Adam and I were at a writer's retreat at his family cottage when the news broke. And frankly, we are still shocked that he didn't call his book In Too Deep, because to us, it is the perfect name. Not only is it one of their biggest songs, if not their biggest song, certainly in the top two, and Fat Lip is not as good a title, not as evocative, or, you know, not as transpositional, maybe. In Too Deep just captured so much of how we felt growing up that resonated with that music. It encapsulated the scope of the book and the idea that it's these Canadian artists in playing an American game and of trying to become famous musicians, and just how in each of the nine artists, they were doing something in some way that had never been done before.
Wow.
And as young people who are, you know, more likely to be more overwhelmed, it just captured so much of those feelings. And there was really no other thing we could have called it. Like, that was the name that I came up with when I came up with the idea for the book. And the second email I sent Adam about this, In Too Deep, was my working title in my head. And so I just can't think of anything else we could have called it.
It just gives me the chills. I have to quote your gorgeous writing here and share this with my listeners. As Kapranos conducted the crowd into a crouch during the final extended breakdown of the final song of the night, I took a look around me at the people struggling to get low due to skinny jeans or bad knees, or if you're like me, both. After singing at the top of my lungs to songs that had followed me most of my life, I was met with the sudden peace of realizing that it was okay to have my favorites rezoned into the retirement halls of classic rock. It's not about staying young and relevant and cool and hip forever, but it's about liking what you like, keeping the good times going as long as you can, and knowing when to pass the torch. Love your writing so much. I just have to say this. I don't know, it just gets into my, I don't know. There's something about your writing that just, like, I don't know anything about punk rock, but I'm in it. I can't wait for this book. So can you say more about what you meant in this piece that you wrote?
Yeah, so that is a piece about the Scottish band Franz Ferdinand, Scottish rock band Franz Ferdinand. And I saw them for the very first time perform at History in East End of Toronto in August 2022. They were doing a greatest hits tour. And the subtext here is, I had put in my resignation at Exclaim the week earlier. And so I was in nostalgia mode. And it just struck me as just, yeah, it's seeing that concert at that vulnerable time when I decided that I was going to get, like, you know, move on, make some more room for younger writers. I just was met with so much peace. And I think that was me kind of grappling with the decision I had made to leave this job that was unlike any other job I could ever fathom. But it let me know that, like, the end of childhood was okay, and that, and just how comfortable I could be in a crowd of my peers. And without being, like, hip and cool and young and, you know, on the come up, it allowed me to be like, you know, I don't need to keep up with the new music and the new trends all the time. I can just like the stuff that I liked when I was younger because I liked it when I was younger. Allowed me to like wear nostalgia as a badge of pride and not as a sign of weakness.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That's so beautifully said. We just had on the band Gregory Childs and Heartlung. It's interesting because you're on the show and there's so many connections. Your mom, as we talked about, has been a CBC journalist. We met in journalism school. We both worked on CTV's The Shirley Show. Nancy Crosby was a makeup artist for the stars and for Lloyd Robertson and was Shirley's makeup artist. Her daughter, Nancy Crosby's daughter, is Tyra, who's a member of Heartlung. She has another name called Velvet Jean, but she is the daughter of Nancy. So there's so many connections. We're all connected. I just want to ask you, just out of curiosity, you sang as a young child. You wrote songs as a young child. I'm looking at the rap and I'm not listening to it. I'm sorry. You did all this. Are you still interested in singing and in writing music and performing it?
So I joined a choir about a year ago, a local Toronto auditioned choir called the Annex Singers. I only was with them for a term, 4 months and one show, before I decided to take a break that has become indefinite just because of the book, because unfortunately too many Monday rehearsals were rolling around and I hadn't done as much work on the book as I had wanted. And I was going to rehearsal stressed and almost resentful of myself. And I said, you know what? I need more flexible social commitments. I love choir. Not for now. But yeah, I do still sing. And I sing more liberally at home now, I think, now that I've had a more recent choir experience. I still love it. Although my operatic style, classically trained choral singing as a bass is very different than the music I like. But I will like to sing pop or rock songs with that bass choral affectation.
Will you come sing for us on the show sometime via MP3 track?
Absolutely. Oh, 100%. You give me a song and I will do it.
I love that. I'm going to follow up on that. That sounds amazing. There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show. And of course, we're going to ask it to you. What is bliss for Matt Botkin?
Bliss is all-encompassing. It's absorbing. It is getting so wrapped up in something that is generating excitement for you and for the people around you. I think it is, it's passion and community.
Sounds great. I hope you're in that state a lot.
Yeah, you know, it comes and goes, but it is always aspirational and you always get there eventually.
When will the book be available and where can listeners buy it? I read the release date is June 2025. Will there be a launch party and can I come?
Yes and yes. We are figuring out where in Toronto it will be, but Judy, you bet you'll be there.
That sounds guest wonderful. List. I want to thank you so much. It's really been delightful to have you on the show. And I'm so excited for your book. And everybody, you have to look out for this wonderful, wonderful book. And I'm just going to get the name of it. Again, the full name of the book is
In Too Deep, When Canadian Punks Took Over the World.
I love that. What is the best way, Matt, for people to contact you and connect with you on social media in the meantime to hear about it and just to be reminded about the exciting release next year, June 2025?
So I am on Instagram. My handle is Diskinbobulated. My last name is Bobkin. So it's DiskinBobulated. Find me. I will be posting about the book very frequently, very soon.
That's awesome. We can't wait to read all about it. Each week we spotlight someone who's living their bliss and we'd love to hear from you. Just email us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com or you can follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. In Bliss News, there's a fantastic theatrical musical presentation which is related to mental health, diversity, race, gender identity and expression, oppression, and indigeneity. The show is called Truth and Illusion, and it's taking place at the Oakville Performing Center on Friday, November 8th at 8 p.m. To purchase tickets for Truth and Illusion, all you have to do is contact the box office at 905-815-2021 or 1-888-489-7784. That is the Oakville Performing Center, 905-815-2021 or 1-888-489-7784. I would like to thank our wonderful guests, Tyra Coleman, Gregory Childs, and Matt Botkin for being on the show today. And thanks to everyone here at Bliss and on Zoomer Radio. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.